You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Kia ora te whānau, kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te reo irirangi pōho. You're on The Breakfast Show here at 95BFM, and we're listening to the beautiful Outside the Outside by El Aro Negro, or Roberto Carlos Lang, who is an Ecuadorian-American musician who's actually released 6 studio albums and 5 EPs, but in the last few years has sort of reached a bit more attention, I think, from his wonderful 2019 album, This Is How You Smile, which we thrashed here at BFM. And today he's releasing a brand new record. It's called Far In. It's out via 4AD. And it's really, really magic. It's very preoccupied with thinking about the end, not necessarily in a depressing way, but in a kind of thoughtful and compassionate way, thinking about climate catastrophe, thinking about nature and the importance of that. And also, of course, the pandemic informing that as a context makes a big part of the picture of how this record was put together. It's also a lot of memory comes through in this album, and a lot of family history, and visual language is a big part of what El Aro Negro does as an artist. And I was very pleased to be able to have a chat to Roberto last week about this record, and we're going to have a listen to that now. This is El Aro Negro chatting to me about the new album, Far In. Thanks so much for chatting to me. I had such a nice time listening through to this record. It's absolutely gorgeous. You must be very pleased with it.
I am. Thanks, Rachel. Yeah, I'm so happy with it.
It's got quite a magical quality to it, and I think that the story about how it kind of started pre-pandemic and then has taken on new meanings across the, I guess, early stages of the pandemic writing process is a really interesting one. How do you feel that's reflected in the music?
Yeah, it's difficult to say because of, like, my situation when I was last year. I was in Marfa, Texas, and we were in a city, in a town of about 1,000 people, and we couldn't get back to New York. And being there, the town in itself by design is isolated. And so I was like, we were able to hang out outside and go around, like just be in nature a lot. And in a way, all those things I had already worked on, as much as it was like a terrible moment globally, we were lucky to be where we were, and it was a little bit of an uplifting moment because we had this opportunity to be with nature, to be honest. And it was inspiring to be there. And I think if I wasn't there, I don't think this record would have sounded the way it sounds now at all. I think this connection to being outside was a whole new perspective, and that's inside the record a lot.
I think that comes through really strongly, and I also really resonated with, I think, something that you said along the lines of, you know, you have to go inward quite often in times like this, and I think that's something that, you know, everybody's had some form of experience with, and this is quite an introspective record in many ways. How did you feel, I guess, when you were making this? Were you thinking about, you know, beyond nature, what other things were you thinking about in the process of creating this album?
Nature was a big one. I mean, I was thinking about the climate and thinking about, like, this is actually the only thing we have, and, like, you know, things like this keep happening. What are we going to turn to, you know, if we can't just go outside when we want to? So that was a big one. And there's a song on there called Hometown Dream, and that was like a little bit of like a reflection on like the idea of like home, like what is home, and how home is just really what's in your mind, what you feel. And it's a little bit of a riff on that Captain Beefheart song, My Home Is My Only Head Unless It Rains. And what else? There's a song I wrote for my mom on there called Telescope, and it's a little bit about being locked down, where we're only looking at each other through video, you know, just like this life through the video.
Telescope is a good way of thinking about that. It's a strange way to interact, and I think we've all had to get used to it in such a in such a rush, and then it's dragged on so much longer than anyone really anticipated. It's great to have places like music and nature to use as a refuge. Also, memory as well seems to be something that I found listening to this felt like a big theme. Were you kind of exploring the concept of memory, do you think, when you were writing this?
I think that comes up because of experiences, and I think that's always a big, huge part of my process. I draw on memories, but I think the way I draw on memories, it's not like I'm remembering one single event. I kind of used it with a lot of like poetic license in terms of like being impressionistic with memories and seaming them together in like a lyrical way and kind of collaging them into like something that feels like an idea of what I remember, but isn't like talking about anything specific.
I think impressionistic's a really nice word for this record. It actually sort of touches on that sonic quality that a lot of your music has as well. With the production aspect of this record, how do you approach that? And you work with quite an amazing cast of musicians and fellow vocalists as well. How do you kind of bring together the sound of a record?
It takes time. It's like this one, you know, I started this one in 2018. The last song on Far In was one of the first songs I wrote the last week I was finishing the last record. So, and then I spent a lot of time in 2019 having friends come over to the studio and us recording different ideas with the intention I was going to take all these like seeds and of ideas and bring it to like another place and bring a lot more people together and just work on things together like for a week. And obviously that couldn't happen. So so now the record had to develop on its own in terms of like a remote kind of way. So it wasn't that it was piecemealed. It was just like there was a lot of ideas already, but there was a lot of songs. I think the record was like 23 songs or something crazy at some point. And then, yeah, so it's now only 15.
I wanted to come back to the idea of Marfa because it's somewhere I've never been, but it has quite a cultural weight beyond its size as a small town. I think music fans hear of it as an almost mythical spot. It's had so many amazing collaborations and music attached to that place. Could you describe it a little bit for people who have no real idea of where Marfa is and how it does influence music making?
Yeah. Marfa is in far west Texas. It's very close. It's maybe an hour to the border with Mexico and Texas. And it's just east of one of the largest national parks called Big Bend, which they call Big Bend. It's where the Rio Grande bends really in a big way. And the town itself is about 1,000 people, I think, live there. And it's in the desert. It's in the Sonoran Desert, I think. I might have that wrong, but it's fascinating because the desert is so expansive, you know. There's something you can see so much for so far, and it's just so epic, you know. Sunset, the sunrise, everything, the heat, the intensity of the heat, the sun, you know, how cold it can get, and just knowing that you're in the middle of nowhere. You drive like half an hour out of town and you get no service, you know. You're like, oh shit, this is rough. Like if something happens, I don't know what's gonna happen. And then Marfa in itself has like what you were saying, the cultural weight of it. There was historically Donald Judd had gone there and bought a bunch of land and property and made a lot of art out there that people go visit, and there's foundations out there that support that work. And so there's a lot of tourism, art tourism. And then the institution we were working with called Ballroom Marfa that does a lot of great work, and we're working on a gallery show with them in January. And so it's got a really cool, it's got a lot of respect in that realm, but also a lot of people who've been there for generations, a lot of Mexican, American folks, a lot of brown folks who've been there for so long. So there's a lot of, commercial, cultural things that are definitely talked about, but there's also historical aspects of it that I think are overlooked because you know, it's not part of like the way to sell tourists to come, you know? So I think that's something I really learned about, was just like understanding a lot more about the people who are from there. It's a lot. There's a lot going on there.
It must have been nice to be able to spend quite some time there and sort of get to explore that while you were making music at the same time. It feels like a fruitful period for yourself as a musician.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was unique. Very, very unique. And I think I'm really lucky to have been there.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the fact that you sing in you know, Spanish and in English. How does it feel for you when you write in different languages? Is it something that you feel like you're accessing different parts of your own creativity? Does it feel very natural to you? How does that process pan out in the creating part of music writing?
It feels natural. It's not necessarily like... when I'm writing a song, it's not like I'm like, this song is going to be in English, like before I even write it. It's a lot of times it's working with sound and feeling it out and feeling out like a really easy way to talk about this is like, there's a song on the record called Agosto, and I just liked the way the mouth shape was and the melody and how it worked with the melody, the word Agosto. And then I just started thinking about Agosto, which means August in Spanish, and all the things that I remember from that month growing up or whenever. And some of the more like visual and vivid kind of memories were like, there was all these like orange trees around me, and like I would see orange blossoms, and then there'd be fruit and you'd pick them, or the fruit would land on the floor and they would rot, and we were little kids and we used to throw them at each other, or, you know, just like all these like little things that are kind of like layered into it. But it was like that was like kind of the inception of how I wrote it. But then Gemini and Leo was something kind of similar in the sense where like Gemini and Leo was came from my wife and I are like our astrological signs, right? And she's a Gemini and I'm a Leo, and I just kind of liked that idea. I was like, man, well, I should just make a song about that, you know, just like
yeah.
And I found the melody for it, and I was like, cool. And then I was like, man, I kind of really like this song. I should probably really write some lyrics now, you know? Like, so I think it was like, you know, it's those moments where it's like, it's just fun, creative flow. Watch me. We can take our time in cosmic palette, which is like from stars that shine on planets, constellations of.
Got like a beautiful visual quality, this record, and that's I think part of the fact that you are you're very visual in your language as well, and you use language in a way that's very conjures a lot of images for a listener, even if you don't speak Spanish necessarily. I found La Naranja such a gorgeous track to listen to, and then looking at the lyric translation a bit more, it's got so much poignancy about this sort of surviving the end of the world message. Tell us a little bit about this song, because it's also got a hilarious and gorgeous video as well.
Yeah, it's definitely music that I think about with that, you know, when I was making this record, being in Marfa, I was thinking a lot about this, you know, urgency to like recognize like our place in the world. And I'm not perfect, I'm not an environmental crusader at this point in my life. I would like to be more, I'd like to be better at what I do and how I interact with my environment. And I think that's part of what this song and what I'm meditating on a lot with this record is like, you know, what is our place in this world? I think there's a lot of like, with the song, I'm thinking about a lot of like, how much like, political aspects of what we all talk about muddy up bigger picture things, you know. It's like the divisiveness of it all, and then just knowing that like, oh well, I don't know, like this is going away now, this is hotter now, this is like flooding now, or this is, and not to be like a, and you know, not to be so dismal about it, but it's really just me meditating on that and inserting a lot of like hopefulness, being like, look, I'm talking to myself, I'm like, it's possible, something's possible, we can save something. And then it's kind of talking a little bit more outward, like, you as in you, like whoever's listening, I think you can do it too. And I know it sounds kind of funny, I guess, but it's true. Why not? Why not talk about this in this way, you know?
Yeah. And I think it kind of takes on a new resonance after the year or the, you know, 2 years now that we've had of this pandemic where everything has felt, you know, insurmountable, and then yet here we are still managing to have music, have the things that make community function. For you at this stage, what do you feel about how music is functioning right now? Because it's totally new terrain and we're all still working it out, particularly when it comes to live performance. How do you feel about this part of being a musician at the moment?
I don't know. I've definitely had a lot of my self-doubts, you know. It's nice to be able to share. I think it's a huge privilege for me to be able to like work with the label that I'm working with, to be able to have the opportunity to have access to the things that I have access to. I think it's wonderful. I think music is medicine for sure, and it's magic. There's a lot of aspects of it that are part of like making money that are really kind of difficult to come to terms with sometimes, you know?
How do you know somebody is someone you want to collaborate with on a track?
Most of the people that, I would say 99% of the people that are on the record are friends of mine, the people that I've like worked with in some capacity or another, whether it was music or just hanging out. And I just have a huge respect for their work. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't mean anything, you know, like when you actually try to put it to practice to try to make something, sometimes it's just a huge flop and you're just like, well, that was fun. I'm glad we hung out,
yeah.
You know? So a lot of the folks are a product of, you know, that process in terms of like seeing that we are compatible and in working on something together, or at least in that moment we were. And that's kind of how it happens.
That was El Aro Negro, or Roberto, chatting to me last week about the brand new album Far In, which is out today via 4AD. It is a really magic album. Very, as he said, impressionistic in both the sound and the language that he uses. And it muses on these really big concepts and quite scary topics, but with a lot of hopefulness and a lot of heart, which makes it a very wonderful record to listen to. It was such a pleasure to chat to Roberto, so thank you so much to him for speaking with me. I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to know the music we were listening to, we started off with Outside the Outside, then La Naranja, Gemini and Leo, and we're currently listening to Oriole. And we are going to jump into the latest single from this wonderful album, Far In, which is called There Must Be a Song Like You. You're on the BFM Breakfast Show. I hope you're having a nice morning out there.
Take me in stride.
BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.